Welcome to another episode of OccupyInterview.com Radio. Today's guest is going to be Kevin Ryan. Kevin Ryan was a researcher at UL Laboratories. He was fired over controversial opinions over the 9/11 World Trade Center NIST NIST documentation on the explanation of the collapse of the buildings. He's also involved with the Occupy movement. Our host today besides me, James, is Terry Bain. I want to thank Bradery, Memford, KD Droxel, and everybody else out there that helped getting the show on the road. Terry, why don't you start us off?
Hey, thank you there, James. Just wanted to say thanks again. It's good to have Ocean Radio back on the air. And Kevin, say hi for us, if you would.
Hello there, Terry and James.
It's good to hear from you.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you, the first question is the question that really, where were you on 9/11? Do you remember where you were and what you felt that day?
Yes, I do. I was working that day at UL in South Bend, Indiana. I was just making technical reports in the laboratory, and my colleagues and I began to hear on the radio the news of the events of that day. And, it obviously was immediately stunning sort of reports coming through the airwaves. And we really didn't know what was going on at the time, but the media throughout the day appeared to have some direction in telling us about what was happening and even who was responsible even that first day.
I think like a lot of us that there was an emotional component that day, which it's turned out to be, was done by design. Would you have had any concept at all that within a couple of years you'd have to organize a legal defense fund over what was happening on 9/11?
No, absolutely not. In 2001, I was, I would say I was politically naive for the most part and not terribly involved in politically oriented issues. But, over time, particularly in 2003, I began to see the deception behind the run-up to the Iraq War. And that brought to mind comments made to me by our company's chief executive officer and other top managers at the company about how UL had done the fire resistance testing for the World Trade Center steel 40 years before to ensure that the buildings wouldn't do essentially what the official explanations claim that they were doing, which is fail from fire. So, those deceptions relative to the run-up to the Iraq War, the lies about aluminum tubes and Niger yellow cake and so forth. The international press was reporting these very clearly as forged documents and lies. And so my mind began to wander to the question of when did this incredible lying begin? Because, if the Bush administration at the time could have lied to start a war that fairly obviously was going to kill at least thousands of people, then what kind of lies might have been behind the events of 9/11? And as I learned more about the buildings and how the government stalled the investigations and then struggled really to come up with any plausible explanation for how the first three buildings in history could have fallen through the path of most resistance due to fire. The first three instances all in the same place in the same day, never happened before or since. That led me to really question those fire resistance tests.
Could you address that too? That's really a crucial point here. Is in the entire history, am I correct on this, that there's only been three structural steel failures, and those all happened on 9/11?
That's right. The only three instances of a tall building falling, completely collapsing, as these buildings did. The only three instances in history were on 9/11 and all in the same place. So that is a very improbable scenario, and it leads to a lot of other questions.
Especially when you give some thought to there were only two plane crashes that day, as far as we know, correct?
That's right. A lot of people are not aware that, of course, the towers each hit by one airliner, and those towers were actually designed for impact by 707. But there was a third building, World Trade Center Building 7, which at 5 o'clock in the afternoon fell into its own footprint in a matter of seconds, and it was not hit by a plane.
How did you end up from that point ending up needing a legal defense fund?
Well, I actually started asking questions that year, 2003, as I saw these lies about the Iraq war, and it started to add up to me that there was something fishy about 9/11. I started asking questions at my company, trying to clarify with the CEO who had told me about the fire resistance testing, and the fire resistance division manager tried to communicate with him and reconcile this problem that, you know, we had certified the steel as a company to ensure that the buildings lasted for multiple hours. And one of the buildings was destroyed completely in 56 minutes. So, you know, from fire, which brought into question our testing at the very least. And I spent about a year going back and forth with these guys, and they really pointed to this NIST report, which you, I believe, mentioned. The National Institute of Standards and Technology is the federal agency that created the World Trade Center reports, the official accounts. And that agency put out a draft presentation of its report in October 2004, and it was just immediately evident to me that they were falsifying the results. Not the actual test results. And in this case, they did tests on the floor assemblies to see if they would support this pancake theory that was a longstanding explanation. And they also did steel temperature tests. And those results were straightforward, but the summary report actually contradicted the results in order to support the political story. So what happened is I wrote a letter to NIST directly as a division manager of UL, and asked them to reconcile this, to clarify how could these buildings fall when we had tested the steel as we had to certify for multiple hours. For having sent that letter, I was fired by UL for damaging their relationship with NIST, who was a customer of the company, and bringing this sensitive issue into the public spotlight. So that's what brought me to a legal defense fund, because you know, being fired for just trying to help, in my view, was something that led me to legal action against UL.
So the truth basically was important enough to you that you wanted to keep pushing. Did you get some kind of feedback that if you kept pushing, there were going to be ramifications, to put it lightly?
Well, after I'd sent the letter to NIST, it was 5 days before I got fired. And over that weekend, there was a weekend in between, and the top management at UL had gotten together and met about it. And they called me on the phone and they asked me if I'd asked these people who I copied, who began spreading it around the internet, if they would take it all down off the internet, if they would, stop publicizing this. And I told them pretty much, no, I won't do that. I think the world needs answers to these questions. The 9/11 attacks and what happened in New York and Washington really are the driving events behind the war on terror, which is largely the origin of a lot of our financial problems and our civil rights issues. And, of course, the slaughter of millions of people around the world It's just, it's absolutely unacceptable. And for a company like UL, which is claims to be a public safety guardian, to not speak up about something like this, and that they still haven't taken a public position, it's just, it's unconscionable.
What has there been an outcome of the legal case yet, or is that still hung up in the courts?
Yeah, the initial legal case was dismissed by a federal judge in Indianapolis. It was kind of odd that a lot of what happened with the World Trade Center reports and with the ruling on this case all occurred at dates that were kind of politically convenient, right before the 9/11 anniversary. One year, the judge ruled that the case would be thrown out. And basically, UL's defense was that, you know, it's just a bunch of conspiracy theories. And interestingly, their law firm they hired was Winston & Strawn in Illinois, which was chaired by a member of the 9/11 Commission, James R. Thompson. So there's a lot of odd sort of coincidences going on. But basically, the government has not allowed any 9/11 cases to proceed, including those brought by the 9/11 victims' families.
The impression from a lot of the people we've talked to in the Occupy movement is that that seems to be why the groundswell for Occupy supporters is the total lack of any kind of the rule of law seems to only apply to certain people, and that's unacceptable. You said that you and your wife are involved with the Occupy movement there in Occupy Bloomington?
Right, we have been, yeah.
How did you guys get started with the Occupy movement?
Well, I think like a lot of people, we read about it as it began and thought it was really kind of cool and courageous that these people would stand up for their rights and do something about it. And so we decided to try to help. We marched with a group called Occupy Bloomington, you know, we went down through town against traffic, blocking the traffic, and rallying at the Chase Bank in downtown, and going to the farmers market and having a big rally there. We've also been down there again. A couple of times, and in addition to that, have had a discussion group on the events of 9/11. Since I have such a strong background in 9/11 truth, that they asked me, a couple of them, to come down and just discuss 9/11 with the Occupy Bloomington folks. So, you know, the movement, Occupy movement, has I think a similar kind of a set of challenges that the 9/11 truth movement does, and that is that the goals are sometimes varied among the people involved, and then otherwise they're also not very well understood by people outside the movement. So you know, of course, a lot more about the Occupy movement and the goals of that or that movement, but with 9/11 Truth, we have probably the most common goal is to have a new investigation, an honest and independent investigation, which is most likely to come through an international body of some sort. You know, in addition to that, we believe, a lot of us, that 9/11 events were not the result of these alleged 19 hijackers alone, and that means that we've been lied to, and that means very likely that democracy has been subverted through this means of the origin of the war on terror. And so it's very similar in some sense to the way Occupy is calling for transparency, financial transparency, financial equality, mm-hmm. job equality, I think, whereas the 9/11 truth movement is calling for transparency that will bring about revelation of a history, really, of deception that we believe will lead us to more positive, long-lasting positive change in our culture, so that we'll all be able to recognize the deception in our lives and the, even the self-deception that we engage in, and that will prevent things, hopefully, from occurring again, terrorist acts like this, as well as financial crimes, you know, being the victims all the time of financial crimes, we as the 99% kind of just being the victims, and instead rising a little bit up and saying, you know, we need the truth, and the truth we believe will help us go forward in a more positive way.
James, okay. Did you have some questions coming in from our audience?
I did have one question, but I wanted to ask a question first. Is it James? I saw that you're connected with Occupy Building 7, and I think that's a fantastic idea. You know, where do you think we are on in the 9/11 truth moment today, and how can we get it introduced to the Occupy movement? It seemed that there was a lot of support from the theoretical left to investigate 9/11, and it seemed to me now looking back that it was more that it was just because it was a Republican in charge when it happened, and it seems like. Yeah. You know, holding people responsible kind of just dropped off once Obama got elected.
Right.
Can you address that?
Yeah. I'll begin with the Occupy Building 7 initiative, which was a project that was put together by a group in Connecticut, 9/11 Truth Group out of Hartford, West Hartford, Connecticut, in conjunction with a group called the Remember Building 7 Initiative. So a Remember Building 7 is an organization that has put out mainstream videos, that is videos of 9/11 victims and 9/11 family members that have been played on mainstream television around the country. So they raise a bunch of money and they put these videos out that asked for more awareness and investigation of Building 7. So these two groups got together and they tried a project called Occupy Building 7, and that basically was a call for people to come together in New York City and Manhattan at the site of the new Building 7 and occupy the new Building 7 as a means to raise awareness and call for the new investigation. So that happened in November of last year. It's pretty much complete. You know, going forward, the 9/11 truth movement has a lot of different professional groups now. It's changed a bit from when I first got involved, when it really was, as you said, a lot of grassroots people working together around the world, really, around the country and around the world, to put on conferences, to raise awareness through blogging and letters to the editor and so forth. You know, in 2006, there was a national polls that said that more than a third of Americans, Scripps Howard came out with a poll that said 36% of Americans believe that the U.S. government was either involved in the attacks of 9/11 or somehow just allowed it to happen. So that's a huge number of people. Now in 2012, the media has been controlled a bit, and that's one challenge we have. That leads us to see probably a less mass awareness interest in 9/11, and more now these professional groups, scientists for 9/11, media professionals for 9/11, religious leaders for 9/11, and so forth. Architects and engineers for 9/11 is a huge one. There's 1,600 licensed and engineers, licensed and degreed engineers and architects who are calling for a new investigation. And then, James, I forgot the last part of your question, which was really compelling, too.
I was wondering how we can bring the 9/11 truth portion of the story into Occupy. You know, a lot of people say, oh, you're one of those conspiracy nuts or whatever. And then at the same time, they'll tell me that I should be supporting all these carbon taxes and global warming initiatives and other kind of green sciences. which I find just as much as a conspiracy as anything out there at this moment, personally.
Yeah.
But that was the question.
Okay, well, I think that this exact sort of thing where, Terry and yourself reached out to me and we're starting a dialogue here. We're starting to discuss how we have things in common and how, maybe we can and figure out what to do to achieve each other's goals simultaneously. I think that's exactly what we need to do, and think 9/11 truth groups need to reach out to the Occupy movement and vice versa, and see if we can't agree that there are some commonalities in what we're trying to achieve. Really, when 9/11 truth people are convinced that 9/11, the events of 9/11 were a false flag or were, as I said, a subversion of democracy, that's really what a lot of the Occupy movement's goals appear to be related to as well, a subversion of democracy, a subversion of equality, and a growing imbalance in equity is how I see it. Take, for example, the recent law in the last year or two where these super PACs can contribute unlimited amounts of money to political candidates, and we really can't find out who it is that's funding our politicians, our political leaders. As far as we know, we really don't know who's funding them. At least that's how I understand it. And so, that's another subversion of democracy that leads exponentially to more of this inequality financially. And, in terms of justice, so the 9/11 truth movement is a justice movement, and it is definitely a peace movement, which many people don't really see. And I think the Occupy movement is also a peace movement.
Okay, we do have another question from the chat room. They wanted to know progress on your case against UL, or if you can tell us what your legal situation is currently.
Well, currently we don't have a legal action against UL, but we continue to consider those options. And I've talked to my lead attorney this weekend, and he is actually working on a number of things, trying to find ways to support 9/11 initiatives. But we don't have currently a legal action in place.
I just wanted to touch base here. We're kind of, there's so much to address here in a half an hour show, and I really want to thank you, Kevin. You're doing a superb job. It's really good to hear that you've gone through a lot of the same questions in your mind that we've all gone through. It seems to be a similar journey that we're all taking. I guess one of the questions here that we really would like to get is, as a chemist, your background is as a chemist.
Right.
When we're seeing 9/11 science, or like James just mentioned, when we're seeing climate change science, what's your guidance to people who are not chemists on how do you recognize the difference between good science and bad science? What are the debunkers doing?
Well, that's a good question, and basically, good science is something that's falsifiable. So if there's a claim made, first of all, you need to make really certain that you understand what the claim is that's being made. So some of NIST's claims are that steel softened at temperatures that obviously that's never happened before. There's no evidence for that.
Is that reproducible?
It is reproducible. We could actually do those experiments and show that that's not the case. And in fact, historically, that sort of thing is already in place. With 9/11 science on the independent avenue, there's been a lot of analysis of World Trade Center dust for a couple of reasons. There's an international team that's published a paper that's gotten a lot of attention that shows that the residues of thermitic materials are present. In fact, even unexploded nanothermite materials are present scattered throughout the World Trade Center dust. Other studies have shown that metallic microspheres that really could only have been formed through high temperature processes that haven't been explained otherwise appear to be the result of thermite, which thermite is this really high temperature chemical reaction that can be used to soften metal, has also been used in demolition devices. And so that kind of science is falsifiable as well, because anybody can get a sample of World Trade Center dust. They can find out if these metallic microspheres are in the dust. They can do analyses on them. They can look for these red chips that this team has presented evidence on. And you know, science is just a process of learning, and we all need to be open-minded about it. It doesn't need to be the worst thing that can happen. It becomes just an argument in a chat room somewhere, when really it needs to be a series of peer-reviewed published articles that support or challenge each other. That's the way science proceeds.
Are you seeing that sort of peer-reviewed type of scientific method, for lack of a better term for it? We know that you are producing results that are what we used to call scientific method, if there is such a thing anymore, that it is something that is it reproducible or not. You call it falsifiable. I guess
right.
It's the same thing.
Same.
In other words, you can prove whether or not it's false or not. It's not
That's
subjective
right.
truth. It's objective truth, correct?
That's right.
Are you saying, and the dog agrees too.
I apologize for that, yeah.
That's okay. We wanted to get his vote too. Again, Kevin, you've left us with a whole lot to be thinking about here, and we'd really like to get you back on the show somewhere up the line. Keep us in the loop on what do we need to know about how the Occupy movement and the 9/11 movement. I think you've made the case beautifully that this is something that is a part of the Occupy movement. It's obviously a part of you and your wife's reason for being part of the Occupy movement. Did you have anything you wanted to add here? Because we're kind of running out of time. We're going to have to wrap it.
No, thanks a lot for having me, and I'd be glad to come back.
It sure be great to have you. I want to thank James, my co-host, Brattery, our engineer. Am I forgetting anybody, James?
I would just throw in there that you can find us and contact us through OccupyAmerica.name.com. If you just Google Occupy America, you should find it, we hope. Join up.
And we'll have some links up that are recommended to us by Kevin to kind of, if he has any recommendations for further reading for people that are interested in this. Right now, we're about out of time. So that's about it for Ocean Radio for this week. And again, thank you, Kevin, and we look forward to talking to you in the future. Thanks for standing.